The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
All right, everybody, welcome to El Phoenix in Greenville for episode 7 of the Lions Roar Coaches Show here in Greenville. We're going to start off once again. We've had a good run with it. Every time we've done this with you starting off, we've had a good week, it feels like. Starting off with our head volleyball coach, Craig Case. Lions go 2-0 last week. Not necessarily ideal ways to win the matches, but pulling out 2 5-set wins, going behind 0-2 in both of them, and winning both of them. We'll go through the game by game here in a second, but how great is that to know that you've got the home crowd behind you when you need something in a match like that?
Well, it's fun. I mean, to be able to come out, and I know it's a lot more exciting for the fans than it is for the coaches, and I know the
players.
Well,
I'm sure it's exciting. It's just that's not always a good word.
It was a battle, and the reality is, both teams are good. And I've got no problem beating either of those teams in five. You know, what's frustrating to me is you come out flat on your home court and you dig yourself a hole. But that's what we talked about in both situations is, hey, you know, our goal was to win tonight. We dug ourselves a hole. Now we got to dig ourselves out, and we're just going to have to play that much harder. And so the good news is when you're at home, it's a little less taxing when you have to play that hard to come back and win. And then because of that, we were able to come back and do it on the next day again. So it was exciting to get those wins. And you know, when you look up in the crowd, when you're down 2-0 and nobody's left and it's still packed and it's still loud, you feel really good about your chances of coming back and winning that match. And so that's what I really felt in both those matches this weekend.
It's got to be a little bit of a different feeling in the Lone Star Conference now when you're down 2-0 to WT on a Friday night. I remember a time not that long ago when that was about as much of a volleyball death sentence as there could be. And you've still got the confidence in your team. How much, looking back, we were talking after the show right here 3 weeks ago, how you're the longest tenured coach in A&M Commerce history. And I know we've got some inside jokes about that we won't bring up right now. But, you know, you've seen a lot of Lone Star Conference volleyball. Yeah. Sarah's seen a lot of Lone Star Conference volleyball. How much has it changed? How much has our program changed since you got here? When you think about just that mentally, that's totally different than it used to be.
Yeah, you know, I think the mindset of, you know, if we play our best, we feel like we can beat anybody in the league, beat anybody in the state in Division II. You know, we've beaten everybody in the state of Texas. That's Division II since I've been here, and so we know what we're capable of doing. We've got to have better buy-in to playing our best volleyball every opportunity. But I think the biggest difference of where our program is at now compared to where it was when we would have been down 2-0 and you're just fighting not to get swept. Number one, we've got better players. Number two, we've got a lot better institutional support. And then number three, I think and this ties into better players, but depth is important. If you look at both of those comebacks from this weekend, it was significant lineup changes. And it was just stuff that other teams aren't quite ready for. And then once you get a little momentum in volleyball, it changes everything. So I think our ability to go a little deeper to our bench, to be able to change lineups and really mix things up and feel like we can win, I think that's a pretty substantial change from, you know, 6-7 years ago when I was just getting things going here.
Looking at the box score from the Friday night win over West Texas, 86 kills in the match, but you look at there's a few more names showing up in the box score than normal, and I was getting some texts from Marcus while I was doing the stats. He's like, "We're playing a few more people than normal." That's not exactly how he said it, but it's definitely more polite. How much does a lineup change in a volleyball match help stir the pot? How much is it a signal of intent from the coach to the rest of the team that they need to step it up?
Well, you know, there's a couple of different ways it's going to go. You know, you could use it for rest purposes. You know, if you're getting just blown out of the water and we got to get regrouped, let's get some different players in, get the starters out, let them see some different things. If it's close, you know, you've got some hungry players. I mean, everybody on our team's pretty competitive, and nobody wants to sit on the bench. Mm-hmm. And so you've got some pretty hungry players that are sitting there waiting for their opportunity. And that's a great opportunity if things just aren't clicking, but you're just right there and you can make that comeback, which we did in the second set against WT. You can get some of those players that are hungry and get things going. And that's really what happened is you know, we just caught fire in that second set, even though we didn't win it. We came back from a pretty substantial deficit, and we had a lot of momentum going into that third set, and a lot of it was based on those substitution changes. But, you know, some of our biggest programs or some of the biggest wins in the program since I've been here has been with depth. You know, if you go back to Concordia St. Paul, I think we had, what, 12 different players registered to kill? I mean, that's a lot of hitters.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that second set, you're down 22-14. You're only 3 points away from losing very much, much more quickly than any coach would like. And then all of a sudden you look up and you've tied it 22-22.
Yep.
When you're facing that much of a deficit, going on a run that big is pretty uncommon, no matter how motivated you are.
Yep.
So that had to be a good sign going into the last couple of sets. We already have our first listener question.
Oh, excellent.
If I can get my new phone to cooperate. Here we go. Let's see. First user question. One was about football tickets, and we will answer that question. It's already been answered in the comments, but we'll answer it on the air when we get to the football segment. Here we go. This is very relevant to winning a five-set match. Can you use volleyball net material for fishing and lobster traps?
Well, I'd never have. So
Sarah, have you used them for fishing?
Yes, we're going to the fishing expert on the coaching staff, and she says yes. So to answer that question, is that was that the gentleman from Campbell?
It's Spike calling from Bowles.
Okay, excellent. Bowles, I think that says Bowles.
Yes.
yeah, you could definitely use the netting material for a variety of – and we have figured this out the hard way. One of the stats we probably also lead the nation in is being in the net. So we have tested the durability of many nets across the nation this year.
See, I like how you also turned that back around and brought it back to actual volleyball. So very good audience and crowd participation. So that WT match, when you look at the numbers and there's this – if you look at the stats on our website, there's this little slider –
yeah,
it kind of tints it, shows you who's leading in one way or the other. And it looks like we statistically dominated. We out-hit them. We out-aced them. 30 more kills, 21 more points, 25 more digs and all that stuff. What is the difference that made it so close throughout the match? Because even though we did come back and win, we didn't blow them out in any of the sets until the third, and the third the short set anyway. So statistically, that's kind of a weird set anyway.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was their defense. They, you know, they were really well prepared for us. You know, and they're as familiar with us as we are with them. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, that's why I think that different lineup change really impacted that match, because they were really prepared for our starting lineup and the lineup we've had a lot of success with. So I think they defended us really well. Blocking, I mean, they were fantastic on the net that night, and we struggled. And so, you know, in an area that we're usually pretty good at, you know, we struggled in. And so, you know, I think I give a lot of credit to them of putting themselves in a position to win that match. And at the same time, though, I'm really proud of our team, because we just kept doing our thing. And that's what we've been doing. And we've done that to a lot of teams. You know, we've outkilled pretty much everybody we've played. And, you know, we've got good offensive hitters. We've got good setters. We've got good ball control players. And we kept doing our thing and kept fighting to play our volleyball. And in the end, we were able to play our style, and I think that's what made the biggest difference.
Moving on to the Saturday match, you come back in the afternoon. Saturdays are always a little bit tougher on short rest, no matter how quickly or how long it took on Friday night. And you find yourself down two sets to none again. A little bit different. There weren't any blowout sets, and the second set goes to extra points as Eastern wins 27-25.
Yep.
But you came back and a little bit different. It seems like there's some fire. Just looking at the score, it seemed like there was some fire, some anger, some frustration to be released in those last three sets.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, Eastern New Mexico played incredible at the end of that second set, and we dropped it. We were up 24-19, 24-20, somewhere in there. You know, and again, we've got a really good offense, and for us to not be able to score 1 point.
24-19, and they come back and take a 25-24 lead.
Yeah, so for us to not be able to score 1 point in five tries, you know, I think everybody was really frustrated with that, the positive thing about this team is they go, hey, we're frustrated, we're upset, we're whatever it is, whether I'm getting in trouble with the refs or they're getting in trouble, they do something with it. Instead of just stewing and having a negative attitude, they go, hey, I'm frustrated, how can I make this better for our team? And they use that emotion.
So that gets us to the halfway point of the Lone Star Conference schedule. Two losses in conference early. early in conference play.
As early as you get.
As early as you can get. You start off 0-2, and then you wind up at the halfway point. You're 8-2 in third place and only behind those two teams.
Yep.
And I think we asked this question going into last weekend, especially I think those that WT Eastern, they're right there in the middle of the pack.
Yep.
And if they win those, that changes the entire look of where the conference is now, but we win instead. So looking at it, Tarleton's 10-0, Angelo's 9-1, we're 8-2, and next up is WT at 6-4. Kind of a repeat question, but everybody's at the halfway point now. How do you feel this has worked out versus expectations around the league?
Well, you know, I think it's probably on par. You know, I'm disappointed because I felt like we had two really good opportunities early, and at the very least we should be down. You know, we should have one loss in conference play. But Tarleton's a good team. Angelo's a good team. WT's, I mean, there's a lot of good volleyball teams in this league, and if you, I mean, Eastern New Mexico showed us on Saturday. If you give somebody an inch in this league, they're going to take it and they're going to make you pay. And so I think we're right on track of where, you know, we should be. We're at. And I wish we had one or two more wins in conference play, and I wish all those things were happening. But, you know, we did it to ourselves, and now we're in a situation where we just got to continue to take care of business. And we've got Angelo and Tarleton this weekend. We've just got a lot of things in front of us right now. We just got to stay focused on playing, trying to play our best volleyball every time we go out, every rally, and just keep fighting to win points.
So with the condensed schedule a little bit this year because of the fall festival, you've got a lot of Tuesday followed by Friday, Saturday, followed yep. by Tuesday, followed by Friday, Saturday. And if you're at home on Tuesday, you're on the road Friday, Saturday. And if you're on the road Tuesday, you're home Friday, Saturday. So there's a lot of action coming up. How much does that mess with your preparation, especially, and if some people might not even realize this, there is a mandatory off day. It doesn't matter how much you have to or yeah. need to play, you have to have an off day every week in college athletics.
Yeah, you know, I think this time of the year, the list of things you're working on is pretty minimal, in at least in our case. And so they're critical, though. That's the downside, is we've got a few things that we got to continue to get better at, but they're maybe the biggest things to us being successful. So we eliminate some time to do that. But, you know, we're spending so much time on the court right now, and everybody else has the same schedule. So it's not like we're having to play 9 matches in 14 days and nobody else is. So everybody's going to be on the same schedule. And I think that lends itself to your mental toughness and being creative with your preparation and being efficient with practices. And so it definitely affects it. But at the same time, you can't let that stop you from the progress you're trying to make.
Looking ahead to the weekend at home, massive home matches yep. against Tarleton and Angelo, when the top of the conference all has to play each other and play each other with some room after it in the end of the season to know what's going on. This isn't going to clinch a LSC top seed for anybody, but it sure yep. can make a heck of a difference. And there's a little bit of a revenge factor, and both these teams lost at this place last year, which is out of the ordinary for them when you think yep. about it in terms of what they're used to over the years. How amped are you and the girls for these two matches?
Wednesday, we got to begin preparation for, at that point, will be the next biggest match of the year, which will be Tarleton, and then the next biggest match is Angelo, and the next biggest match is TWU. And so, you know, we always joke that we get sick of saying it to our team during practice, but hey, you guys, this is the biggest match of the year. But in the world of college volleyball and the level that we're trying to compete at, they are. And we're in a league that's good enough that any team can really trip up anybody any night. So you've got to have your A game. And on Wednesday, we'll really turn our attention to Tarleton and Angelo. And those are going to be fun matches. They're going to have huge regional impacts as well. And so, you know, we got to do everything we can do to put ourselves in a position to go 3-0 this week.
Talking about how important it is to emphasize that the next match is the biggest match and not looking ahead to any, and you alluded to the regional impact and that kind of thing. But I think that is a sign of where the program is, that it truly is.
Yep.
If you're one of these teams down here at 4-6, 3-7 in the league, the next match is – whoever your rival is.
Yeah.
That's what your
yep.
biggest match is, not the next match. So that's got to be refreshing as a coach to be able to say that and not have it be just coach speak. It actually does matter that yep. the next match is the biggest match.
Well, you know, we spent a lot of years, and our focus wasn't the regional rankings. Our focus was conference positioning and seeding, so that way our path into the national tournament or the NCAA tournament was winning the conference tournament. Essentially, so we were always fighting for seedings and then hoping to get an upset in there and then try to get our way in. And so it's logistically it's easier to get a bid, But at the same time, it just puts so much pressure on every single match that you get really familiar with that type of pressure. So, every match this week is going to be critical in that. And certainly Angelo and Tarleton, with the records they have, will be really big as well.
Looking ahead at the regional rankings, right now we're at 22 in the national rankings, which, for people who don't know, that doesn't have any implication on the actual number in the regional rankings. You could be ranked below or above somebody separately from the regional and national, but it is usually a good indicator of where you're at.
Yep.
First regional rankings, it looks like, I'm trying to come out in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, October. No, that's 2 weeks, October the 24th. So how do you feel about having, and I know, so you're, as the resident stats junkie of the department over here, I'm supposed to be, I'm the sports information guy, you might have me beat. So I know you've got spreadsheets and
yes, I do.
All these other things. How do you feel about how the rest of the region's played out and keeping up with the rest of the region? What's your, we ask this about the conference, but that's pretty obvious. It's head to head.
Yeah.
This has a lot more variables. How do you feel about regional, especially based on our really excellent out-of-conference in-region season we had earlier in the year?
Well, backing up just a second, I used the phrase, their stats are trending upwards this morning when I was referencing Midwestern State to our volleyball team, trying to make sure they understood that Midwestern's playing better, because I've got some spreadsheets that show their performance is getting better and better, and they're peaking when they play us. So anyways, getting back to the regional rankings, you know, I think we've got a couple of blemishes that are going to hurt us. You know, I wouldn't consider any of them bad losses. You know, Harding beat us. They're a good volleyball team. Mm-hmm. They're going to do just fine in their league. Metro State beat us at home. It's a tough one to win based on being in their gym, back-to-back matches. And then they're a good volleyball team. So those two losses might ding us a little bit. And then we lost to Angelo and Tarleton. And Angelo's going to do real well in the regional rankings, and so will Tarleton. So I don't think any of the losses that we've had are going to kill us. The one thing that will hurt, not hurt us, but that won't help us as much as I would like, is a Concordia St. Paul win really isn't going to do a whole lot for us, as it's not a regional opponent, and neither will Lewis. They'll help us in certain areas,
yes,
but we won't get as much mileage out of them as if we had beaten Metro or Harding. So, you know, those four losses, but if you're sitting here 20 matches or however many
24.
Matches we had in the season.
No, it's 20. It's 20.
And you've got only four losses, and your four losses are to Harding, Metro,
Tarleton,
Angelo and Tarleton. I mean, come on, you're sitting in pretty good space, and you got to feel good about where you're at, because those are four really good volleyball programs, and none of them were at home. So we've got a lot of opportunity, I think, to even push ourselves higher up in the regional rankings if we can play the way we're capable of playing.
Well, 10 matches coming up in the next 2.5 weeks. It's kind of hard to believe. Friday night's only 2 nights from senior night.
Yep.
Kind of crazy. There's a lot of travel, a lot of home matches, a lot of action to be had. Before, and then all of a sudden you're staring right down the barrel of the LSC tournament,
yep,
which is three of the tougher days of volleyball in Division II. Where did the rest of the season go? Like, it feels like we haven't been playing that long. We're on the seventh episode of the show, but here we are, and the season's almost.
That blew my mind, by the way, when you said the seventh episode. I was shocked.
But anyway, so, like, where did it go?
It's every year. I mean, every year it feels like it takes forever to get here, and then it's gone like that. And that's, you know, and it's one of the things we always talk to our players about, especially our seniors and our juniors. You know, in a couple of years, they don't have this opportunity anymore. I mean, they don't have the opportunity to practice. They don't have the opportunity to play in matches. They don't have the opportunity to travel with their friends and do all these things. And so the impermanence of it makes it really important. And I think when your athletes can understand that this doesn't go on forever and I got to really value this experience, they tend to get more out of it. And I think the one thing, this team has really enjoyed that process this year, and they know. And you have to play with some urgency, but you can't play with any, you know, like, oh, my God, it's just going to be over in a year. I mean, you got to play with some urgency, but at the same time, you got to just enjoy the opportunity and enjoy the process.
Well, three matches coming up at home on Friday and Saturday against Tarleton Friday and Angelo on Saturday, which will lead right into the football game. Should be a great weekend for both your programs.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, that's Coach Case. Let's give him a round of applause. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk to Colby Carthel about it was a mildly interesting weekend for the football team. So we'll see what he has to say about that right here on the Line to Work Coaching Show.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
All right, we're back here on the Line to Work Coaches Show, Episode 7 here from El Phoenix in Greenville. We'd like to thank our friends here for having us. We're here with our head football coach, Colby Carthel. The Lions pull out one of the most boring, ho-hum, average, never seen it before wins I've ever seen, 20-19 over Midwestern State. And just a, another opponent, not a rival, nothing big. No, seriously, that was – have you ever been involved in a more interesting weekend of football before we get into any of the details? Just win or lose, that was the most interesting weekend of football I've ever been involved with.
That was next the longest game I've ever been a part of, I think. One time in college, I was playing Tecmo Bowl, and we hit pause on it, and we went out for a few days and then came back and finished. But other
I'm impressed your Nintendo didn't freeze.
Probably did. I was making it up, Josh.
Oh, it's a great story, but, though. I like it.
No, it was a wild weekend, and really proud of the guys and how they handled all the adversity and like I say, a lot of travel, a lot of heartaches and mishaps and things that came up that we could have just thrown in the towel and used an excuse to not play well, not win. But they overcame a lot and found a way to win the ball game against a really quality opponent. So it was a real good win for our guys, for our team.
Before we get into all the insanity, there was 60 minutes of football that actually got played. That was a very, very entertaining football game, a good football game on both sides. Their offense did well. Our offense did well. Our defense did well. Their defense did well. Special teams, both teams had some errors that played into the result. Looking at the game, the yardage was about as even as it could be. There mm-hmm. were no huge differences outside of the turnovers, one of them which was just a weird punt bouncing off the back of a guy's leg. But looking at it, E.J. Thompson runs for 150 yards, a career high. About the only thing he didn't do was punch in the end zone, but he had big runs, short runs, key runs at big times. Running backs did a great job, I thought.
Mm-hmm. No, our run game, our offensive line really controlled that game throughout, and it was odd. It's almost like we played two different games. Played one on Saturday for 30 minutes, and we tied 10-10, and then played another one on Sunday, and we won 10-9. So, but really pleased the O-line. The running backs ran really hard, and there was a few times they were stopped short, and O-line just grabbed a hold of them and just – move the pile another 7, 8, 9 yards, and so that was really good. And they were instrumental in that big 98-yard drive there in the fourth quarter that really I thought took the wind out of their sails and got us the lead that we didn't relinquish. And that's one thing: if we can get a lead with the defense that we've got, we feel pretty good about our chances. And they sure delivered as well.
Kane Wilson went 17-28, 238 yards, a touchdown, and a couple of picks, one of which was in the back of the end zone at the end of a drive. I thought he's really coming to his own, having watched, that rain-soaked Colorado State Pueblo game. It's hard to judge him on. Lock Haven, definitely not the caliber of defense we're used to seeing in the Lone Star Conference. So good to see some progress, but not necessarily a huge measuring stick. But then against a very good defense and a very good team, I thought he performed very well.
No, he did, and he gives us a great chance to win every time he's behind center, and it's been fun to watch him. You just mature within the offense, and his play continues to get better and better. Obviously, we'd like to have a few throws back, but that's going to happen when you throw the ball as much as we do. So really pleased with him and in the offense overall. I mean, we would like to limit a few turnovers. That's if you call it an Achilles heel. We're not ranked real well in turnover margin. We're not creating many and turning over way more than we're used to around here, but that's even with like this game. Everybody's going to talk about, they missed all these field goals. Well, we left a ton of points on the board with, three turnovers, one in the end zone, and, we had a chip shot field goal we missed on Saturday night where Kristoff slipped on the wet turf and just yanked it. So there's plays in a game like that you always go back and say, what if? But we feel really good that we made several plays throughout both nights that allowed us to deserve the victory.
Defensively, one of the biggest plays, I thought, and you and I have talked a lot of, as we've gone off the air, about Leighton Rabb, the quarterback at Midwestern State, and the year he's having. It reminds us a little bit about what Luis did last year. Mm-hmm. He came into the game, if I remember right, with 18 touchdowns and no interceptions, and then before he was able to get a touchdown, interception number one happens, and then it seems like every week now Dominique Ramsey has a big return, whether it's an INT, a punt, or a kickoff. He's doing something with the ball in his hands that's helping change the game.
Oh, he's a very dynamic player and made a great break on that ball in that first half. For that was, again, that was the first time that old boy's been intercepted all year. And he our defense really played well, gave him some looks he wasn't comfortable with. I think he finished just over 50% completion percentage, no touchdowns, and one interception. So I know his
under 50%, 22 or 47.
So he was, I think, second in the country in pass efficiency. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's there anymore, and that's a tribute to you know, not only our defense players but our defensive staff. I thought they put together a great game plan and really had them greased up there, especially on third down. They were one of the top teams in the country in third down percentage, and our guys did a really good job, held them to about 36% or
33%. 5 of 16.
So really, really nice job when it counted on defense.
And then another defensive player I want to highlight as, before we get to the big one was Mike Anoha. I think he, just because of the schemes other teams have been using and personnel that we were throwing out there in the Lock Haven game, he didn't need to be out there for the whole game, so he's not going to get a ton of numbers. But eight tackles, tackle and a half for loss, and a lot of disruption back there. I think he's definitely back on track at a perfect time in the conference season.
No, he's playing very well. He's the top rated NFL prospect in the Lone Star Conference this year amongst the senior class. So and he's really putting some stuff on tape and playing at a very high level to warrant that, you know, distinction, I guess. But we have NFL scouts, sometimes two or three. You have to put out the tweets.
Got to get another one out tonight.
Yeah, so they're really rolling through, and he's playing at a high level, and I'm just glad he's on our team and not someone else's.
I mean, I can't imagine a redshirt sophomore defensive end from a small town suddenly lining up against Big Mike. That would be quite the experience. Defensive player of the week for the conference is Brooks Sadoff. He finished with nine tackles, half a tackle for loss. He teamed up with Nima Bebahani, who also had a huge tackle for loss on that third down in the second quarter. And then he blocks the kick. With that blocked field goal there in the fourth quarter, with the 60-man travel that we have in conference, it reminds me a little bit of the NFL, that you've got to have guys on defense who can play special teams as well. Right. And I think Brooks and Big Mike, too. Big Mike had a block kick earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. Those guys definitely show their versatility in road games when they have to.
No doubt. And we try to build our program a lot, model it after the NFL. And we have some of our very best players playing offense and defense, playing on special teams. Mm-hmm. And you'll see a lot of starters running down on kickoff. That's why they lead all of college football and kickoff return defense. So they're doing a very good job throughout our special teams. We did have a few uncharacteristic miscues, but I really think overall our special teams outplayed theirs. We had the snap that sailed over the head and got a safety, and so we're having to kick off from our 20, and that's usually not good for field position. What do? Touchback. You don't see many 80-yard touchbacks.
That.
So we've got some really talented players, and I think, got a really good offense, got a championship defense and very talented specialists. So I think that's a good recipe to win a lot of football games, and we're on track to do that.
Talking about that 80-yard touchback, Christoph Martinez, he's the LSC Special Teams Player of the Week. Lions sweep the LSC Awards this week. Christoph, that should be a kickoff there. So kickoff, six kickoffs, five of them for touchbacks, and then he also went 2 for 3 in field goals, and that second field goal he makes, Sunday, turns into essentially the game winner. And it's his 62nd career field goal, which ties the LSC all-time record for field goals. That's a heck of a night/day for one of the best players in the LSC's history at this point.
Right. No, I think we've had 87 or 88 years of LSC football, and he's the very best. So it's really fun. People are getting to watch history in the making every time he takes the field and puts it through the uprights. And I know he's still chasing the overall scoring record set by a kicker that we had just – grew up about 20 miles from where Christoph's from, down there in the valley, and we had him up there at West Texas, Sergio Castillo. So I know he's got his sights set on that record, and we're going to have to play a while and score some points for him to reach it, but he's getting closer each and every week.
Moving on to this week, before we will cover all the insanity for everybody watching. I guarantee you we will. Move up to number 7 in the rankings, and then there's another undefeated team staring us right in the face in the Tarleton Texans coming to town this weekend. They're at number 16 in the country. I've talking to other people, and I've had plenty of time in press boxes during lightning delays in the last couple of days to talk to people about the Lone Star Conference. They're like, aren't you a little surprised by this? And I was like, when we were talking about it in the summer, we weren't very surprised with the success that Tarleton's having. I mean, we feel like they could be 6-0 if they've gotten to play SFA, Stephen F. So what does this matchup present for us in what is now yet again one of the big matches in the Lone Star Conference?
Right, two undefeated teams in conference play in a top 20 matchup. So it's going to be a very, very exciting Saturday. They are incredibly talented, and I called it last year. They kind of had some, I think, injuries and some things, you know, fall apart on them a little bit there through the season last year. But I knew they were turning the corner into a premier team in this league. Coach Witness, he's a guy I've respected. I played against him back in the 90s and coached against him in the early 2000s. And He's a tremendous coach and has got a very, very talented roster. This is, I think, one of the more talented teams this league has seen in terms of pure talent in, you know, 10 or 15 years. And so folks will be in for a good football game, I think, two really, really good football teams, a lot of tremendous players playing out here on Saturday. And we definitely have our work cut out for us. So we're hard at work. Coaches are working hard right now trying to break down film. We're a day behind and everything else, but I know we'll have them ready to play Saturday at 4 o'clock.
Saturday 4 o'clock. It is Youth Sports Day, battle for the President's Cup. Expecting a big crowd, and I think this, especially with the short trip between the two, the history between the two, President's Cup on the line, this should be yet another big matchup. So back to, let's go back to rewind about 3 o'clock Friday afternoon. I'm going to guess you're in Bowie, I believe. It was
game day. It was Saturday.
Oh, Saturday. So we drive to Denton on Friday. Yep. That's right. Stay the night in Denton.
Actually practice at Apogee Stadium.
Okay. Well, which is a very nice facility. Thank you to North Texas again. I'm sure they're all tuned in. But that facility is Apogee. That's an incredible
facility. Dang it, I said it wrong again.
Well, they're not one of our corporate partners, so I'm okay with that.
Yep.
We're on the way to Wichita Falls, and for those of you who have not made the trip from the Metroplex to Wichita Falls, it's not – the most scenic drive, and I asked you last week, where do you eat when you're headed up that way? And
Armadillo Grill
and Bowie, because I learned a number of times now there's not that much between Denton.
It times out
and
perfect.
Wichita Falls.
It's a really good restaurant, and they do a great job feeding us year in, year out, and it's also connected to a Western wear store, so you can buy a pair of boots, and there's also a gas station all right there, so it's like a mini Bucky's. It's kind of awesome.
See, that's perfect. I know where I'm going to stop next time in Bowie. So you stop, you eat, everything's great.
No, we never made it there.
Oh.
And the bus broke down.
I thought at Amarillo.
We were about, 10 miles from the Armadillo Grill, and the bus started having trouble. We pulled over. We tried to go again. Boom, it just dies. Side of the road. We left the offense. We trucked on and dropped the defense off to eat, sent that bus back to pick up all the offensive players. In the meantime, while they're sitting on the side of the road, we had them unload the bus because all our gear is on the bus. You don't know if that bus is moving anytime soon, and so we just dumped all our equipment there in the bar ditch there on whatever road that is, and loaded the bus and took off. Then I grabbed the people mover, 15 passenger van, we take all our extra coaches in, sent them back, and they had to haul all the gear on that and then brought it there. And in the meantime, we're calling Bowie ISD and their football coach and coaches and getting them out of practice or out of meetings, and who's got a CHL and CDL. I guess they could be packing heat as well, but got their CDLs and jumped on the Yellow Dogs. And they came and picked us up. So here we roll on after a good meal at the Armadillo Grill and rolled on up there to Wichita Falls and Bowie ISD, Yellow Dogs, just like the olden days in high school. And so everybody's rode those before. It's kind of nostalgic, and hopped off there and got ready to play a football game. So they did a great job.
I was going to give a shout out to the Bowie Jackrabbit staff. They had a tough one facing a defending national champ the night before.
Yes.
They're in the middle of breaking down the film from that, and they're nice enough to come get us.
Yep.
So thank you very much to the Bowie ISD coaching staff. So you get to Wichita Falls finally, place we've all been a number of times. You're playing the game. Lightning strikes right before the teams come out of the locker room we're already out there. We've done the coin toss.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Lightning strikes. We have to go back.
We knew it was
going to
be weather, and we had talked about moving the game up. There's weather earlier in the day, and it just wasn't very conducive. So we tried to start, went out and warmed up, came back, came out for kickoff, bam, lightning strikes. Here you go, back in. We know that we won the toss, and we deferred. That's about all we got done. And we knew, and that ended up playing dividends for us, winning the toss. So we finally get out there after about a 45-minute delay, play the first half, tied 10-10. Lightning struck right there with about 8 seconds to go in that first half. They let us go ahead and get off and finish. And so then we're in the locker room, and it's just one after another. It just keeps resetting. It's a downpour. We waited it out for about 2 hours, and we finally said, we're not getting it in tonight, so let's start working towards getting this thing played tomorrow. So obviously you would try to get hotels. It's not easy to get 41 rooms at 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday, but we tried. And it was family weekend there at Midwestern, so obviously they had, a lot of folks in visiting their students there and whatnot. And we couldn't find anything in Wichita Falls. We expanded out almost to a two-hour radius called Altus, Oklahoma, Duncan, Oklahoma, Lawton, Oklahoma, up to Vernon, down to Denton. We were looking everywhere and couldn't find. I think the most rooms we found at one spot was like six. So
wow.
It was a mess, and we knew we couldn't stay. So we said, all right, we'll start working on a neutral site. So in the meantime, we sent the team back and just said, go home, get them to bed. And our athletic director, Tim McMurray, and I and Coach Gallego stuck around, and we're just all – there's just four of us now in the stadium. It's still raining, lightning everywhere, and we're trying to work a neutral site at Gainesville ISD. We had agreed on that. It was 90 miles for Midwestern, 89 for us. So that, you can't get much middle of the road than that. But I think we got their superintendent out of bed about midnight, and he – politely at midnight, I guess, told us no, that it wasn't going to work. And
that would have been an interesting phone call to be on the other end of,
yes,
for sure.
And so then we were just, and by that time, our conference commissioner, about midnight, he gets involved. And so we're still trying to work. What about Denton? And the only place we know is Apogee Stadium. And so we happened to call our friends there that are athletic directors, and they wouldn't answer because they're in an airplane flying back from El Paso. They'd played at UTEP. So we get them on a text, and you've got wireless on the – so they are on a plane somewhere above, you know
– probably Midland about,
yeah,
this point.
Midland, yeah. Odessa somewhere. And they're texting us back and forth, yes, we can make this work. So, bam, about – I guess it's about 1:15 in the morning, we decide that we're going to play the next day at 2 o'clock at Apogee Stadium. And so we shook hands, said, see you tomorrow, and we headed on down the road. And we never even made it back. Our players made it back about 4 a.m., took about a three-hour nap. They had to be back on the bus at 9. I wasn't there. I was staying with our athletic director, Tim McMurray.
We'll cover that in the next,
yes,
segment.
Luckily, we had double beds.
Okay, good.
It wasn't as bad as it could have been. But it was just a crazy night all the way around. We swapped film with the, you know, there's a half worth of film.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we agreed on that before we left Wichita Falls, that, you know, you're going to share that film, and if you want to look at it, you can. Well, our staff got some hardworking guys. They didn't go to sleep. They just broke down the whole first half and crushed film all night and all morning and hopped on the bus and, you know, changing game plans, and here we go. So met up over there, crushed a pregame meal at Golden Corral in Garland, and came on over and suited up, warmed up again, and played the second half and won the game 10-9. So 20-19, however you want to call it.
10-9,
changed jerseys,
19. Yeah,
16.5-hour halftime, you know, it was nuts, but found a way to win.
I was going to say, it definitely made the highlights look a little bit different when June put them together, because it looks like there's three different teams playing, because,
right,
they did. Midwestern did tell me they got to do laundry.
Right.
So they wore the same blackout uniforms, even though it was daytime and they weren't at home, but I'll let them roll with that. But
We had time to do our under stuff, you know, but we didn't have time to do all the laundry, so we jumped in another set of uniforms and went and played another half of football.
I mean, it's wildly impressive that we pulled it off, even more impressive that we won, and hopefully we never have to do anything quite that interesting ever again.
It was wild.
It was wild, and I don't think we'll ever forget it. And this is, like I said, this rivalry's had its share of stories, share of close finishes, share of everything you can think of, and now I don't think we can ever top this one.
Add another chapter to the book.
Yeah, I think you could write a book just about this weekend, probably. And one of the people who would help write that book would be our AD, Tim McMurray. We're going to go a little more in-depth on how everything played out over the weekend. Thanks a lot, Coach Carthel. We'll see you at 4 o'clock on Saturday, Youth Sports Day. Thanks a lot, Coach. We'll be back with our AD, Tim McMurray, on the next segment of Lions Roar.
This show and others like it from KETR.org are made possible by generous contributions from listeners just like you. Donate today at KETR.org.
All right, welcome back to our final segment of the Lions Roar Coaches Show here, Episode 7 from El Phoenix in Greenville. We're here with our Director of Athletics, Tim McMurray. Coach Carthel and I, normally when we have you on here, we're talking about initiatives, we're talking about things we're doing, and with your permission, I'm going to completely ignore it because there's plenty to talk about just from the last 72 hours. So Coach Carthel took us through a lot of the team logistics, laundry, getting the team back and forth. Hotels, all that stuff. People might not realize it, but you have to have more than two football teams and a couple of footballs to play a football game. So as we reach this decision of we're not finishing the game on Saturday night, what's the AD's thought process? What's the discussions that are being had? Who's involved with the discussions, and how does it all go down?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. And really quick, before we get to it, you know, I was tired after the Bowie ISD bus story.
Yeah,
and that wasn't even the most exciting thing that happened this weekend. And our head football coach, I'm very fortunate. We communicate on a daily basis. We communicate well. But when he calls me during what I know to be the pregame meal hour on a game day from the road.
It's usually not a great sign.
Well, and I'm usually near him at that time, but this time being apart, I knew he wasn't calling to tell me the mashed potatoes were cold. So that required a little bit of help, and we couldn't find anything back here, get anything done. So thankfully the relationships our coaches have, just another great example of what having a relentless recruiting approach can do, because you build relationships with those high school coaches. So kudos to our staff for having that in the toolbox.
All right. So we're at the game.
Yes.
It's raining. Lightning strikes. And then it strikes again. And then it strikes again. About when in that process do you realize we're going to have to do something a little more different than just staying up late tonight?
I think if you ask me, Coach Carthel, Coach Maskell, and Kyle Williams, their AD, there were probably four different answers, and we all four interchanged them at some point in that two-and-a-half-hour window. I was trying to unpack it over the last couple of days, doing some different interviews and summaries for people about this, and my timeline is only framed around, I know I ate dinner at Whataburger in Wichita Falls at 1 o'clock where Coach Carthel and Coach Gallegos and I got to also do some community service while we were there, but we can talk about that a little bit later. But anyway, we had about from the – so halftime, we started at 7:45, and that's kind of what, we forget. We didn't kick off till 7:45, so – halftime being around, 10 after 9, 9:15, there were still at least 2.5 hours of conversation. What point do we call it a night, even if we're not coming back or whatever the case may be. So I think all the back and forth on the conversation, what that ended up becoming was, we've got to do all we can to try to play. But when we did all we could, and all we could means – between our coaching staff, Midwestern's coaching staff, their administration, our administration, we were talking about residence halls, we were talking about ranches and retreats. We, as Coach Carthel said, we went at least an hour and 45 minutes in a circular motion and couldn't find anything. And as he said, we could have gotten to 40 rooms, but we would have been at about 15 different hotels, and none of
them. That seems less than ideal.
Less than ideal. So we at that point, I think, probably in that when we'd been off the field for two and a half hours, it was time to send our team home. And our team got on the bus not knowing what we were doing. Midwestern sent their kids home from the stadium thinking it was probably going to be called a no contest.
I'll say this. I ran into three of them at probably that same Whataburger about an hour to hour and a half earlier than you, who did let me know under their breath with no response from me their opinion of our fine institution.
Yeah.
It was good. It wasn't anything bad.
Yeah.
But I believe at that point Midwestern had announced 2 o'clock in Wichita Falls, which was the first of their three announcements we made. One.
Yes.
Just saying that.
Yes.
But
the best information we had, we were going to come back and try to play at 2. After 64, I can account for at least 64 hotels and properties that between our staff, Midwestern staff, our football coaches there. That couldn't accommodate a football team. So it then got to the point where we had to recommend to the commissioner that we may have to call it a no contest, not ideal for Midwestern or us for strength of schedule, and just, we want to play. And Midwestern has the same situation we had last year. They have a bye week this year because it's a tough week to schedule, so that would have dropped them down to 9 games.
Yeah, I believe theirs is week after this, so that's week 7?
Yeah, week 7.
Yeah. That's almost impossible to find.
Very tough to schedule. So with all that being said, we decided and at first, and this is what...
Well, before we get too far on the no contest thing, and when you say we kicked off at 7:45, and this is something I think... it just popped in my head. If we kick off at 7 o'clock, and that 17 lightning bolts in a row... hits at the third quarter. That game's official at the end of the third quarter.
Game's over. Yep.
And if you look at it, if the score plays out, there's no telling what would have happened that night in that extra 15 minutes. But that's what happened at Permian Basin 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
The score was wildly different. The situation's wildly different. But the point of completion for an NCAA game, if you get through three quarters and you can't make it up, it's just ball game, let's go home.
Right.
So the difference in between being in a tie game at halftime, or even had been 17-13 or something right. similar to that, versus 17-13 at the end of the third quarter is a lot different.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't think about that
either. I just thought of that when you said the 7:45.
So our thing was, and for a while, and we didn't really probably unpack this. I didn't even talk to Coach about this because I was thinking about it today. You know, for a while, Commissioner Perner was diametrically opposed to a neutral site. And when that window got back open, when we, you know, were, you know, showing him and communicating with him that there weren't hotel options, we said, let's throw a Hail Mary and try Denton. And so, as Coach Carthel said, we sent our friend Jared Mosley and Ren Baker a text, and they were on the tarmac in El Paso coming back to Denton with a victory, and they talked in the air for about an hour. Really, the only thing, once they agreed to let us do it, we were negotiating window and game time and all that, and they had wanted to go a little bit earlier. We wanted to go a little bit later, so good compromise. We met right in the middle because they had what we needed at that point. And
to be fair, it's their field and
exactly.
it's their team. You can't ask for too much.
Can't say enough about that. I think it helps. Ren and Jared have been really good friends. Coach Carthel's known them a long time, and both of those guys have their blood in the bricks at the Division II level. Jared, very wildly successful athletic director at Abilene Christian. Ren was director of athletics at Northwest Missouri State. They play a little bit of football up there.
I've heard of them.
And so I think they understand the magnitude of this game. They understand the challenges. And typically you do come back and, you know, finish the next day even when you have a unique football weather delay. Been part of that before at SMU, but you play on the surface where you stop the game, not
yes.
where you had to go. So
within three counties or within the same area code or
right.
any number of different
right.
things.
Same classification of competition.
Yeah, for the
anyway.
Most part.
So when the high school option dried up, the meet in the middle high school option dried up, that's when Ren and Jared stepped in and we let the commissioner know we'd made that outreach. And then Kyle Williams, the director of athletics there, really went to work. And I'll tell you, you know, it's really unique. You know, there's already a rivalry there. There's, you know, Midwestern State and ourselves, in my opinion, a very good rivalry for the Lone Star Conference to have that kind of competition, national caliber NCAA playoff teams. And for us to sit in a confined space in a high high intensity matchup, and it's unique enough. The coaches don't talk to each other at half. The head coaches of the opposing teams don't spend halftime together, and that's basically what happened with literally Coach Maskell in our locker room trying to help us make calls and get things done. And you know, there's a coaches area in their locker room, so we were back there huddled up trying to come up. And I think that's what got us to where we could get this game done at UNT, because there was collaborative spirit that evening that certainly didn't have to exist, but we were thankful it did. So then, and you know, very quickly, you know, from an AD's perspective, we've got to get your shop set up, the press box operation.
Yep.
We've got to get an announcer, which obviously would have been you if Roger hadn't filled in. We've got to have a scoreboard.
Play clock and game clock.
Play clock, game
There's
box.
Three.
You know, and that, thankfully, with no tickets. You know, the tickets were already sold for the game, so there weren't ticket takers. There weren't ushers. But you have to get a chain crew, and a chain crew is not just, you know, you and I going out there and holding the officials. Want somebody that is crisp, because we did have we had time constraints. So that was a lot of the kind of 7 a.m. to, you know, 8:45 a.m. Sunday morning. You know, we were on a few calls together, and just watching it come together was pretty special, because, you know, as Coach Carthel said, getting the team fed, getting the laundry, getting what laundry we could get done, getting the other uniforms packed and put together. It wasn't moving well. Some of our linemen are the size of mountains, but we did move mountains in a very, very short compressed window.
And I think one of the other things, and I believe I said this in a meeting, this is one of those where we know football is king in Texas. We know that.
That's right.
Sorry, Craig, but it is. But when you look at it, even if we were at two other institutions, if we were any farther apart than us and Midwestern are without a major metropolitan area, and if it was anybody except maybe Tarleton and us this could happen with,
yep.
but anywhere else in the country, almost any other school, finding a neutral site who will agree to play and is in a quality enough stadium to have a top 10 matchup, even if it hadn't been UNT, which obviously is to me, looking back at it, by far the best option. Absolutely. But there's any number of high-quality high school institutions that we bring kids in from, and Midwestern does as well. And this is one of those where the Texas football element of this football game definitely paid off.
It did. I'll tell you what we learned, though, too. Coach mentioned the Gainesville neutral site, and I don't begrudge them for not being able to do it. There's, you know, Ren and Jared opening their facility. That, you know, that's an NCAA college, well-maintained and well-staffed facility.
Yeah, you're not just throwing open a couple of padlocks and turning on the power switch.
Right, and the Gainesville situation, I understand it because and I hadn't thought about this in a long time because I haven't been in high school in a long time, but the high school game finishes on a Friday night. They're not bringing people in on Saturday and Sunday to clean the locker room, clean up the stands, the field, all of that. So that would have required them getting labor in there on Sunday to host a game. We would have had to get liability done. We're in the A&M system. Midwestern would have had to engage their legal counsel. There was a lot that would have had to happen for as much as it was geographically convenient for the two teams. The UNT option, because even, you know, our backup after UNT was Denton ISD. I threw out at one point during the, you know, I was probably waterlogged and my brain wasn't functioning at that point. But at one point I threw out, let's try McKinney and maybe have a preview of coming attractions for one of us in the national championship game in December. But that would have been a pretty ginormous advantage for us as the road team, because that's about a 55-minute jaunt for us and about a two-hour, 50-minute jaunt for them.
It's about.
So that didn't have legs for very long. But I will say this, and I was surprised, you know, one option that was thrown out as we're checking the boxes is, you know, at one point Commissioner Perner just, you know, because he wasn't there, boots on the ground, so he was asking some questions. He said, well, have you guys thought about coming back tomorrow night? And thankfully Coach Maskell at that point jumped in, and Colby and I were shaking our head already, but on speakerphone, but you know, Coach Maskell stepped in and said, if we were in Commerce, I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Come and back again. And pretty quickly that got pulled off the table, but my point was we were all five of us working together trying to think of a solution, look at locations, because even if Denton ISD, if it had fallen to that, they're going to be looking at the same stuff, the liability, their stadium may not be clean from Friday night, you know, unless even if they had a Saturday game, it's probably not clean from that either. So there was a lot of stuff that just because there's a stadium there, you know,
the stadium still has to work.
Just very, very fortunate that North Texas stepped up. And the other thing, I, you know, want to give a shout out to a lot of people there, but their senior associate AD for facilities and operations. They had a home golf tournament yesterday, home soccer, home volleyball, and oh, by the way, here come these two football teams coming to break up our Sunday afternoon and impose their will for about an hour and 15 minutes in our stadium. But clean game, crisp game. Coach Carth always says we need one more point than they do. That's what I think the score is going to be. And so thankfully we were able to get it done.
And thankfully, hopefully, like I said, hopefully the most interesting football weekend we ever have to deal with. I mean,
let's not top it.
We've been involved in the two plus seasons, I've been involved with seven playoff games, five playoff trips, a national championship, conference tournaments, all sorts of logistical, not necessarily nightmares, but games that will, you know, throw a wrench at you no matter what. Nothing I can think will ever compare to a weekend like this, hopefully.
When we got into our room at the beautiful Comfort Suites in Trophy Club, the last room at the Comfort Suites in Trophy Club, thankfully with three beds,
as Coach Carthel acknowledged,
we had that conversation. We didn't have time to stop and think about the playoffs last year because we were just, you know, we were on a five weeks of fumes. This one we had to stop and think. Yeah. We wouldn't have gotten anything done. And it had to come together, like we said, in about 15 hours once we made the decision that, or less than that, about 14 hours that we had to get it done. So I'm proud of you. I'm proud of Connor Moreno. I'm proud of certainly working with UNT and all of our folks that made it happen. You know, Taylor and Seth getting the cheerleaders there, getting the watch parties lined up, just as always, a team effort and everybody pitching in and doing what they needed to do.
I'll say this, about probably 9 o'clock, the watch party was part of the reason that this happened, because I think it might have been Seth. It was like, hey, is watch party still on? I was like, Oh, I don't know if they're still streaming it, because at one point when the game had been declared no contest, they used the same provider we do, and so they had refunded everybody who had paid for the broadcast and shut down the broadcast because at that point,
I didn't think of that.
At that point, there's no, how many times do you think we're going to, as we look back at, I didn't think about that at the time.
Right.
You know, it's just so many things, and we're like, so I called Trey at Midwestern. I'm like, hey, do you have the stuff to stream a game? Because if you don't, we can. We're doing it right now. Look at Marcus doesn't even have a tripod, and we're streaming streaming this. I'm very impressed. And
well, but Marcus is a trained athlete. So
he is by far the most trained athlete we have on our staff. But it's just one of those every little thing that you don't think about until you have to, because even for a football season, all these things come together. But we think about them for 9 months. In little chunks.
Yes.
You know, I'm not thinking about an entire football game in 9 hours. And just
absolutely
every little thing. So
it was crazy.
Yes. And hopefully it's never that crazy again. So we're going to sign off very boringly after that. Thank you for watching the show. We'll be at La Ventana next week. Go Lions.
Go Lions.